It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
So if you've got a heart condition and your doctor's recommended surgery and no one will insure you, you might want to check out this new pre-existing condition insurance plan to see if you could get insurance to help you cover from day one the health services that you need.
Attorney Jill Hankin at the Virginia Poverty Law Center explains how the Affordable Health Care Act already is ending the practices that put insurance company profits first and people last, and why the 50-state probe into possible mortgage foreclosure fraud could make a home mortgage modification easier to obtain is explained during this week's News You Can Use. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show was supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 104, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. The attorneys general of all 50 U.S. states announced last Wednesday they are joining to probe mortgage loan servicers accused of submitting false affidavits. The multi-state investigation will focus on whether large mortgage companies made misleading or fraudulent statements to evict struggling borrowers from their homes, whether industry employees, so-called robo-signers, signed off on thousands of foreclosures every month without reviewing the files as legally required, and whether they forged signatures and improperly notarized documents. Such actions might have violated laws against unfair and deceptive trade practices and result in civil penalties. Companies could face more serious consequences if the attorneys general find criminal acts or that high-level industry executives knew what the robo-signers were doing. The findings also could be used to press lenders to modify more loans for struggling homeowners or change how the industry processes foreclosures. One reason home mortgage modifications are so rare is that a foreclosure with sloppy paperwork is so cheap. Housing advocates believe that if the true cost of a foreclosure with proper paperwork had to be paid, mortgage modifications might become more common. In other news, more than 58 million Social Security recipients will go through another year without an increase in monthly benefits, which is only the second year without an increase since automatic adjustments for inflation were adopted in 1975. The first year was this year. However, few news reports explain why this is happening. The reason is that in 1972, Congress linked Social Security payments to the Consumer Price Index for urban wage earners and clerical workers, or CPIW. It's similar to the Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, or CPIU, but represents a smaller portion of the population, 32% versus 78%. It also places a slightly lower weight on costs like medical care, housing, and recreation, and a slightly higher weight on those like food, clothing, and transportation. Neither measure adequately captures how rising costs affect the elderly, because the old typically have much higher health care expenses than the young, and those costs have risen far faster than overall inflation in recent decades. In 1987, the government started calculating a Consumer Price Index for the Elderly, or CPIE, which over the past 25 years has risen almost twice as fast as the other two indexes. This verifies what many people believe. It costs more to be an elderly person than to be a younger person. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for the answer to our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? Last week, we gave you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which was incorrect. Here's last week's question. In which two cases can a private employer require a lie detector test? A. For a prospective employee of a security service or a drug company. B. For an employee who regularly handles money. Or C. For an employee reasonably suspected of causing economic loss by theft or embezzlement. The correct answers are A. For a prospective employee of a security service or a drug company. And C. For an employee reasonably suspected of causing economic loss by theft or embezzlement. An employer cannot require a lie detector test simply because an employee regularly handles money. Later in the show, we'll give you this week's quiz. Is that legal? For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the Virginia Poverty Law Center, and we're speaking with attorney Jill Hankin, who is a statewide expert on health law, and we will be talking about the Affordable Care Act that was passed in March and is being implemented. Welcome to the show, Jill.
Hi, Marty.
Tell us, please, what is the status of implementation of the Affordable Care Act that passed in March?
Well, it's really a very exciting time in health reform because September 23rd was the 6-month anniversary of passage. And on that date, a number of very important consumer protections became effective that will help a lot of people get more value from their health insurance coverage.
And when do those reforms actually take effect? When will people actually begin to experience them?
The law provisions took effect on September 23rd, but it will depend on the individual's own insurance situation as to whether or not the reforms will directly affect them right away. There are people who have decided to keep their health insurance coverage that was in effect on March 23rd, 2010. Those policies that were in effect on March 23rd and are still in effect today are called grandfathered plans. And some of the protections will not apply to grandfathered plans, which will remain in that status unless they are significantly changed in the future.
Now, I thought that plans renewed every year, and that once a plan renewed, the grandfather clause was no longer applicable. Am I incorrect about that?
You're incorrect. The grandfather status will continue unless the insurance policy upon renewal makes certain significant changes, like changes the benefit package or changes the co-payments or co-insurance that's required from beneficiaries. So if people like the insurance they have and want to keep it without any changes, and it was in effect on March 23rd, they will have a grandfathered plan for as long as that insurance plan stays the same. Now, if you have a plan that is new, not in effect on March 23rd, then you will need to wait for any renewal that occurs on your new plan after the 23rd of September. I know this is sounding confusing, but the main thing to remember is that the grandfather plans were the ones in effect on March 23rd. Plans that became in effect after March 23rd are new plans, which are generally subject to the new health reform provisions, but not until a renewal occurs after September 23rd.
Okay, so I think that's about as clear as one could possibly make it. So let's assume there is a renewal of a new non-grandfathered plan after September 23rd, 2010. What do those new plans have to include?
Well, an issue that a lot of people are very excited about is the provision that requires the insurer to keep adult children on the policy until age 26. Now, this is a provision that actually some insurance companies have decided to offer their beneficiaries in advance of renewal. So there are plans today that are already covering those adult children up to age 26. And obviously with the recession, bad economic times, it's really quite helpful for those adult children who've just graduated from college or looking for work to be able to stay insured on their parents' plans.
Now, I gather that the adult child does not need to be financially dependent, not required to live with a parent or be unemployed or unmarried or even be a student. But what if the adult child has other health insurance available, like through school or through employment? Can they still be on the parents' plan, or do they have to take the other insurance?
This is a technical exception for a grandfathered group plan, so a policy that was in effect on March 23rd, if the adult child has an offer of insurance from an employer, then the insurance company does not need to extend coverage to that young adult. But that's the only exception. Otherwise, as you said, the adult child doesn't have to live with the parents or be in school. They could be married, have their own family, and still they're entitled to stay on their parents' coverage.
Now, while we're talking about children, whether adult children or minor children, I gather that sick children now can't be denied coverage. Would you explain that to us?
Well, there's a very important change for children under age 19 who have pre-existing conditions. Under new plans, subject to the health reform provisions, the insurers may no longer deny coverage or deny services to children who have pre-existing conditions. And that's really important for kids who may be extremely sick, perhaps born with birth defects or serious health conditions, but it also applies to kids who have allergies or asthma or diabetes. Those children can no longer be denied because of those pre-existing conditions.
And what about adults? Health coverage for people who are adults who have pre-existing condition, what does the new law do for them?
Well, for adults, there will be a prohibition on denying coverage and denying services for pre-existing conditions, but that does not take effect until 2014, January 1, 2014, when other major elements of health reform take effect. And at that point, adults will also be benefited by this prohibition on pre-existing condition restrictions. Right now, though, the law first protects children.
Okay. Well, what if you are an adult with a pre-existing condition and you just can't get insurance because of that pre-existing condition, which I gather insurers are permitted to deny you at least until the year 2014. What options, if any, does the new law give those people?
As of July 1st of this year, there is a new federal insurance program for adults with pre-existing conditions. If an individual's been uninsured for 6 months and they've had a difficult time getting insurance because of those pre-existing conditions, then the adults can apply for coverage through a website that's available from the federal government, and it's www.healthcare.gov, where you can apply for what we call a pre-existing condition insurance plan. And this plan is in effect today. And folks who've had trouble getting insurance because of pre-existing conditions should go ahead and apply. Now, there's no subsidies for the cost of that coverage. And the monthly premiums will range from $200 to $500 per month, depending on the individual's age. So people have to be able to pay for that coverage. But the important thing to know is that from day one of insurance, they cannot be denied for pre-existing conditions. So if you got a heart condition and your doctor's recommended surgery and no one will insure you, you might want to check out this new pre-existing condition insurance plan to see if you could get insurance to help you cover from day one the health services that you need. But again, there will be premiums that have to be paid and a deductible and some cost sharing. But for folks who can afford it, it may be a real godsend for those who know they need expensive medical care, but they have not been able to get insurance.
And your mention of expensive medical care is a good segue to the next issue. I gather that the new law ends the lifetime benefit limits as well as the annual benefit limits. Could you elaborate on that?
For plans that are affected by the new law today, lifetime limits are now prohibited. In the past, there have been policies that have set a cap on how much coverage you can receive over the course of your lifetime. Those are eliminated. In addition to plans that the new law applies to, they are actually phasing out certain annual limits that apply to different policies. So, for example, if some plans may have had a $20,000 limit on certain services, that's going to be gradually increased until in 2014, the annual limits will be completely abolished.
Now, a lot of people are on Medicare, and they have prescription drug coverage through Medicare Part D. And when they hit what's called the Medicare donut hole, they have to pay basically all of the expenses until they get out of the donut hole. I gather those folks are going to get some help nowadays?
Right. This year, individuals on Medicare who fell into the donut hole and had to pay the full price of their medications got and will continue to get a $250 check to help defray the costs of their medicines while they're in the donut hole. And gradually, the donut hole is going to be made smaller and smaller until it's completely eliminated in the year 2020. Also in the meantime, starting in 2011, there will be a 50% discount on brand name drugs for people who are in the donut hole.
Now, I gather that for plans that are affected by the Health Care Act, they have to have a right to appeal a denial decision. I naively assumed that all plans had that. Apparently, that's not the case, and now it will be the case. Could you explain that some more?
Well, part of the health reform legislation does require private insurance plans to offer both an internal and external appeal process. In Virginia, we do have an external appeal process available for people who are in managed care organizations or HMOs, but this would require that external appeal to be provided to everyone. And that means if you're having a dispute with your insurance company about what is and isn't covered or how much they will pay for a particular service you've received, you have the right to appeal. You can first go to the insurance company itself to ask for review, and then later go to an external review if you're still not satisfied. In Virginia, the external process is handled by our Bureau of Insurance, which is within the State Corporation Commission.
And I gather the new law has something even for small businesses to help them provide health care for their employees.
Yes, the law provides, even for tax year 2010, that small businesses can receive tax credits for the costs that the small businesses incur for providing health insurance coverage to their employees. And this affects small businesses that have less than 25 full-time workers employed and where the average salaries are less than $50,000. And they for small businesses in this situation, they can get a tax credit for up to 35% of what the employer spends on coverage.
So we've talked about young adults, we've talked about sick children, and people who are on Medicare and small businesses, and people with pre-existing conditions. I gather this law also has something basically for the rest of us in terms of preventative health care.
Right. The new law prohibits any kind of cost sharing on preventive health benefits. So services like mammograms or annual physicals and cancer screenings will have to be provided without copays or deductibles.
So where can people go to find out more information? Because this is a ton of information to absorb all at once. If people want to know more, what's the best source of information for them?
Well, there are a lot of very helpful places to get information about the new health reform law. You can start with the government website, which I cited earlier, www.healthcare.gov. It's not only where you can apply for that pre-existing health insurance plan, but it's got lots of information about what the law provides, what insurance plans are available in every state, and timelines about when different parts of the law kick in. In addition to that, I'd recommend Families USA has a lot of helpful consumer-oriented material, and that's at www.familiesusa.org. And the consumers union people have done a really good job, too, in trying to keep people up to date on changes as a result of health reform. And that's at consumerreports.org/health/insurance.
Thank you so much. We have been talking with Jill Hankin. She is a health law attorney at the Virginia Poverty Law Center, and we have been talking about the new benefits that we are already seeing from the Affordable Care Act. Thank you so much, Jill.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
It's time for our weekly quiz called, Is That Legal? We give you a legal question and three possible answers, one of which is incorrect, and we give the correct answers next week. If you're the first to email the two correct answers, we'll post your name on our show's website and send you a free copy of Virginia State Bar's Handbook on Your Legal Rights and Responsibilities. Here's this week's question. If DSS removes a child from a parent's home without a court order, which two things must happen? A court hearing must be held within 5 business days. B, an attorney must be appointed for the parent if the case could lead to termination of parental rights. Or C, the parent must be given supervised visitation with the child within 5 calendar days. If you know the two correct answers, email them by Friday to marty@cvlas.org and be next week's winner. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral four, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. What if there were a state agency you could call for free to get consumer information and even have your consumer complaint resolved? There is. Join us next Wednesday when we speak with Penny Jez and Tina Holt at the Virginia Office of Consumer Affairs about what they do and how they can help consumers in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on July 29, 2009. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.